Welcome back, Rock Movers. This is season 6, and it is all about the boys. We've got some amazing guests, so if you're ready, let's start moving some rocks. Welcome back, Rock Movers. Season 6 is on fire, and I can't wait for you to hear today's story, today's rocks that are moved, and get to know my new friend, Rick Cheatham. Rick is an inspiring life and career transformation coach with a rich history as a fire captain and president of the Firefighter Association in Anaheim, California. His journey is marked by profound personal challenges, the rocks that he overcame with sexual addiction, the tragic loss of his oldest son, and a severe neck injury that required him to relearn how to walk just 5 months after retirement. These experiences fueled his passion for resilience and personal growth, which he now uses in what he teaches in his courses, his coaching. After 4 decades of being married to his wife, Kelly, he exemplifies the dedication to servant leadership. He specializes in crisis management and empowering others to navigate life's toughest rocks with clarity and confidence. So you're going to understand fully now why my guest today is Rick Cheatham. Thank you so much, Rick, for being here with us and for sharing your journey with us.
Thank you for having me, Karen. I appreciate it.
Well, and also, thank you for your service. We really honor and appreciate that. And I know that it's been a huge rock that you've moved, but I really am excited to hear you share the lessons. So let's start with really, well, we kind of know a little bit, but let's start with what you feel like has been that biggest challenge, that biggest rock, and then all of the other things that have created this amazing container that you have and serve with today.
Right on. Thank you. Let's go back 30 years then.
Just yesterday.
Just yesterday. Just time flies.
That's right. It does.
You know, I used to be very religious, and that turned into being more spiritual than religious. Uh-huh. So yeah. I kind of navigated away from the religious paradigm when I started to struggle in trying to get help for overcoming sexual addiction that I had back in the late 80s, early 90s. And I couldn't find the help that I needed. Nobody was talking about it. There was nothing I could do to change it. I felt like I was just an absolute scum of the earth, if I can be very blunt. Perverted. Felt like if anybody ever knew what I was doing, I would find myself on the short stick of friendships. And
I think the world has obviously changed a lot in the last 30 years.
Absolutely.
Where we now talk about things in a different light, but I can see how that would have been like that deep,
very
dark secret.
Very challenging, because at the time I didn't know who to turn to or what to do. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I turned to the church. The church was like, keep that down to yourself.
Yeah,
we don't talk about those things.
Yeah.
My wife and I struggled, and we ended up finding a mentor who, for the next 3.5 years, literally walked me through a mind-shifting, paradigm-shifting exercise in just knowing who I am and who I was and what my purpose was. And as a result of going through the turmoils of sexual addiction, my wife and I discovered that that addiction had nothing to do with her, number one. That was first and foremost. It wasn't an indictment against her. It was a struggle that I was battling as a result of who I thought I was, my identity of who I felt I was. And that identity was developed early on in my life. And as I went back and did some of the psychology work to dig up and unearth that childhood trauma, what I discovered was that my childhood trauma dealt a lot around not being good enough, not being accepted, always being under a microscope. And the biggest key to that was that I felt like I was an embarrassment. And that all stemmed from childhood. Now, I take a different approach with the men I mentor today, and I try to dig deeper into that development to find out what it is that the unconscious mind continues to believe in order to run the program of the conscious mind. And I heard it said this way, and it just has always stuck with me. You will never be consistent with anything that is inconsistent with your subconscious programming. So I went back and started to work on the subconscious programming and developed, I use an acronym. It's called AIM, A-I-M. And AIM stands for, first of all, you have to become aware of what's going on in the process of your development. Number two, you have to be intentional about your choices and changing it. Number three, with that intention comes mind shift. Well, I've since developed that awareness takes a little bit more than just knowing that you have a problem. It also requires that you take absolute 100% responsibility for your life and for your actions. So once that was developed, Kelly and I were able to move through our marriage. This was 10 years into marriage. She says, I hate you. I hate God. I hate the church. I quit. And she was off with two young boys, my son, Michael and Kyle. That caused me to really reflect on where I was headed. And I got the help. We processed through that. Yeah, it really was. It was a life-changing moment. And then 3.5 years into our mentorship, my wife gave birth to our beautiful little blessing, Victoria, who, you know, after all those years of struggling, she was walking out the door with two little ones. So this third one was not even a possibility. And then we worked through our issues. We had our third child. We named her Victoria as an instrument of our testimony of victory through the perils of sexual addiction and what that did to our marriage. Now you fast forward here 30 years later, and we had developed and worked with many men and couples who were struggling with sexual addiction. In fact, our church at the time referred to us as the 911 of marriage crisis. So we would get phone calls in the middle of the night. It was a little different for me at that point. You know, I wasn't doing it full time. I was just volunteering. I was just.
Were you still in the fire department?
Full time. That was my vocation. I mean, I was a firefighter. I wasn't a counselor. So I went back to school to get a degree in addiction recovery. I never did finish the degree. One of the things that happened was Mike was killed, my son. And so that caused me to really focus in on a different style of overcoming and moving rocks. And this one was the grief of a father. Trying to navigate through the loss of a child was by far the most difficult challenge that I've ever faced in my life. It brings you to a point of grief where you don't even recognize who you are anymore. Because you know what you used to believe in, you know what you used to feel, and then after the loss of a child, everything just goes. It goes in a state of I don't even know how to explain it. Everything just freezes. Everything just stops. Life stops for you as you see everything else going on around you. Life continues, but yours just stops in its track. You ruminate on all of the what ifs. Could I have saved him? Could I have done this? What if I did that? And you live in what I call Wonderland. I wonder if, I wonder what he would have been like. I wonder if I could have saved him. And that ruminating of the past took me down the dark dungeons again in trying to navigate out of this grief. What I discovered was the more I ruminated on the murder of my son, the angrier I get, the more bitter I became, the more resentment I carried with me through life. And, you know, I didn't like what I was turning into, but I didn't know how to stop it either. Yeah. I just kind of went with it because it's all I knew, my feelings and my emotion.
So can I stop you there for just a second? Because not all of us have had that same experience, but we've all had something happen that has caused us to withdraw from the world or pull away in an effort to survive, cope, deal. You know, we can all deal with or relate to the relationship challenges in our own way, but such a great sense of loss that only a parent that has gone through that can even understand, especially when it's at the hands of someone else. How can our listeners that are hearing this right now, how can they take away something from this moment that they could apply or relate to help them? Like, what's the question I want to ask? I'm trying to.
That would help them relate to maybe their own circumstances
where
they're dealing with the grief or the loss of whatever it is. It doesn't have to
be a child. Right. We all have, like, it's all relative. And I don't say that in a way to diminish what you went through, but whatever we're going through at that moment, personally, is the, whatever the worst thing is that's happened to us is still the worst thing. And so we're still grieving. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a business. Maybe it's, you know, a child that's gone astray. I know I personally have a child that's in addiction. And so that even feels like a grieving, because I'm grieving the baby that I raised, who is now, you know, unavailable to me as an adult in a way that I had hoped for. So, you know, how can we see ourselves in this situation and take away something from this that we can learn and find a way out of this rock?
That's a great question, because it relates so well to what all of us at a time or two in our lives, we struggle with. We struggle with some sense of loss, whether that's the loss of a child. That would be an obvious understanding as far as that goes. But what about the loss of a relationship that you that you coveted? What about the loss of, like you said, an adult child struggling with the addictive cycle? We all experience loss. All of that's part of being human.
Absolutely.
One of the things that has helped me in navigating my certain loss is coming to an understanding of what that loss was creating in me. So your podcast is about rock moving. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what kind of rocks can we move? Some rocks are smaller than others, but our training and our emotional intelligence in our ability to move those rocks don't come until we put in the work to start moving them. We don't know what to do until we actually start putting in the effort to find the solutions. So here's what I did. I started feeling angry, bitter, resentment. I just didn't like who I was becoming. I'm normally very gregarious. I'm normally outspoken. I'm normally outgoing. And here I was caving into this shell and isolating and ruminating on all the past. So here's what I had to come with. As I ruminated on my past experiences and the experiences of the loss of my son, the murder of my son, I got more and more angry with the guy who took my son's life away.
Yeah, of course.
And I didn't just get angry at him for taking my son's life away. I was angry for what his actions caused my entire family. My surviving son, my surviving daughter, my wife, my parents, my sisters, all of it. I was so angry that he had come in and done this to my family. So my question is, how angry can you get when somebody does something to your family, when you become victimized by somebody else's actions? What can you do? So here's what I did. Number one is I became aware of how that emotion was affecting my life. So I looked at the results of my life, the outcome of where this emotion was leading me, and decided that I didn't want to be there anymore. I wanted to make the best out of what had happened to Michael. I didn't want Michael's death to be in vain. I didn't want Michael to not have a voice anymore. I didn't want Michael to be the excuse for not being able to overcome that kind of grief. So we all have it. So now the next question is, what area in your life have you lost? What area in your life have you experienced grief? And what is the emotion that is attached to that experience? And is that emotion attached to a specific individual? Is that emotion attached to the situation itself? Is that emotion attached specifically to you? You find out where all that emotion is coming from and how it's affecting you. Mm-hmm. And then you ask yourselves the question, What can I learn from this experience about who I am and who I am becoming so that I can be the best influence for others navigating their own sense of loss, their own sense of grief, their own sense of shame, if that may be in the equation, and how you find the gold nuggets of those experiences to then create for you a future worth living. And what I had
I love, like, this is, I'm sitting here going, yes, like, this is the whole point of rock movers, because the rocks are going to happen. They're going to come in your path, and sometimes they fall on your head and sometimes they fall on your whole body. But it really is the what next that controls our future, because we can't necessarily control the rocks all the time. Sometimes they are self-inflicted, but usually they're not. Usually it's life. It's what we do with them, what we make them mean.
Absolutely.
And how we choose to control what we do, how we react.
That's
dictates
exactly right.
What comes next, and how we use those lessons, those outcomes, those opportunities.
Right. And
so
then what
I
happens?
So in alignment with all of this. This really is just the whole rock moving principle.
Well,
so thank
think
you.
About, think about that point that you just made. Now, you get people that have struggled that way. What is their number one go-to for anesthetizing that pain?
Yeah. So it's
going to
be some sort of
alcohol,
addiction.
Drugs, alcohol, sex, some sort of addiction. And I'll even go one step further. We don't have to be addicted to substances. To anesthetize our pain.
Yeah, we deflect the energy of what's going on, right? The thoughts, the emotions,
right.
The pain
right.
Into something else.
And here's one of the things that I found myself gravitating towards as an addictive anesthetizing opportunity is that the negative energy, the negative emotion, the bitterness, the resentment, the anger, the victim mentality that I have as a result of losing a son was justified in my mind. I was justified to hold on to those things.
Of course.
What I discovered is that...
And the world will tell you you're justified.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
The world will tell
you. Yeah.
And the world will tell a husband and a wife, you know, who are dealing with marriage problems, you know, if that husband of yours is out there doing porn, I'd kick him to the curb. Well, that's the natural response when we feel injured or hurt from somebody else. That's the natural response of being victimized. And the whole lesson that I learned through this process is that I can choose to be a victim of my circumstance, or I can choose to be victorious over my circumstance. That's one of the reasons our daughter is named Victoria, because we chose to be victorious over rather than to be victimized under. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
As we started to navigate through this process, what I discovered is that in order for me to find the emotional support, the emotional stability to navigate me through life, it was what we would call just having emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence says this: you're not a victim of your emotion. Your emotion is there to teach you. Your emotion there is to help you and to train you into becoming who you were created to be. So when I look at God, when I look at the universe, when I look at the creator, when I look at whatever higher power somebody wants to identify with, I ask them, who is this person for you? Who is it? What is it? What are they there for? Well, for me, God is a present entity in my life that is so real and so alive that it's hard for me to distinguish between my life and what God is doing in my life. So everything about my life is a representation of this journey that I'm on with God to become the man that he wants me to be in order to bring forth the spiritual light to the darkness where men hide so often because of their pain and their shame. And I'm giving an opportunity to illuminate that light in a way that says, you're not wrong, you're not bad, you're not awful. You are learning life lessons. Your rock moving is the equivalent of going to the gym and lifting weights.
Yeah.
The more you lift, the more you're in the practice, the stronger you become. So here's my takeaway from it all. I had to go back in and realize that my justified resentment towards the man that murdered my son, or maybe it's your justified resentment towards the person who left you, or maybe it's your justified resentment for the career that got tanked, or maybe you put it
or
in
abuse.
Whatever, or
yeah,
the abuse, whatever it is. It doesn't matter, whatever it is, as bad as it may be. The number one thing that I had to walk away was, is I cannot be victimized by it. I have to be victorious over it. So in order to be victorious over the mere movement of rocks, you have to first and foremost come to the awareness that forgiveness is at the key of our emotional intelligence. When we can forgive the unforgivable, that's when life starts to happen. Until then, we become victimized by the unforgivable. We hold on to the resentments from the unforgivable. We hold on to the baggage. We carry it with us. It's like lifting up kettle weights. You lift up this kettle weight over here. Well, I'm going to just hang on to this because this is what you did to me. And you walk around with that for the rest of your life. And then you go over and you got another
one.
Pick up that one. And you pick up another kettle weight. I'll teach you what you did to me. And before you know it, you're walking around with so many weights of unforgiveness holding you back that you become stuck. And you feel stuck. And people often tell me, I feel stuck, Rick. Well, I know you feel stuck. And I'm going to explain why you feel stuck. You're stuck because you're carrying the baggage of the victim mindset that you have felt has justified your identity. When we put the justification of our identity on victimization, we become victims of life. And so life happens to you instead of for you. So my major paradigm shift happened many, many years ago, struggling with the addictive cycle. Instead of feeling so much guilt and shame and perverted the way that I did and embarrassed, I accepted that. I just brought it in and said, okay, well, this is who I am. What am I learning about this? Well, I learned, number one, you were just living out a life from the self, from the unconscious programming of your childhood, where you had developed this sense of protection from those who were hurting you, or the way you interpreted the way that they were hurting you, i.e. your parents, the way they make choices, how they, you know, certain standards and belief systems, all that stuff was a part of developing that sense of insecurity, that sense of lack of worth, embarrassment. And once I was able to forgive the man that murdered my son, then it was about learning to forgive my past in a way that instead of holding it against my parents, I let it go. But the biggest hurdle in all of the forgiveness process was just forgiving myself, learning to forgive myself for what I had done to my wife for those years that I struggled in addiction, what I had done to my family, my boys who had to live through their own childhood development under my struggle of addiction. So can you imagine what a 6-7 year old boy's, what they would feel at the hand of their father who's struggling with addiction? There's a disconnect with their mother. There's a disconnect with their family. There's anger all the time. There's a sense of resentment, and it's that negativity just constantly flowing in on you. I had to learn how to forgive myself for that. Now, when I look at what I've gone through, I look at my sexual addiction phase and go, man, I really learned how to trust God in that phase. That was where I learned how to really put all my emphasis on trusting God. And instead of him condemning me to this devil's hell, he was actually awakening me out of my own hell so that I could live free and have a heaven here on earth that is worth living. Well, then you fast forward and you lose your son. You go, whoa, time out. That wasn't right. That's not fair. And then you go right back into that cycle. Now, you use rocks. I use pebbles or stones. You throw these stones into the river or into a lake. And once it hits the water, there's a ripple effect. And that ripple effect just goes across that body of water till it hits the shoreline. And then everything calms back down again. The problem is that rock is still in the lake, still there. And so when another rock comes in there, now we compound it. Now we got the rock before and the rock just went. And then we just start building our own mind thinking, this is just the way it is. This is the way it is. And we program our lives to believe a certain way. And it's in that justification that I believe this certain way that we find ourselves up against the wall of victim mentalities where we get stuck in life.
Yeah.
And the only way to free ourselves is to release the poison that is embedded in our heart for the person that did us wrong. That's why my personal belief is that Jesus hung on a cross and his words to those very people that put him there was not, ah, you're going to get your boy. You just wait till I, boy, I'm going to put you in a devil's hell, man. You are going to suffer and no one's going to. No, he said, Father, forgive them for they know not what they do. So my question to the audience, my question to anybody I can talk, who is the unforgivable that you are being asked to forgive for they know not what they do? And when we can get to that place in our life, our understanding for what's really happening in this thing we call life is nothing more than the purging and the purification and the refinery of the fires, the crucible of life that is creating who we are in this matter into becoming beacons of light, beacons of hope, beacons of the illuminating of the darkness that is within us so that others can be set free, so that others can see the light, so that others can have the peace, so that others can have the life that they were created to live. And if a 60 some odd year old, I'm 62 now, so I'll be 63 this year. If a 62 year old feller can figure it out, having gone through sexual addiction, the murder of his son, the fall and the breaking of his neck that left him paralyzed 5 months after he retired to learn how to walk again and care for himself again. If I can do that, I guarantee you can too, because you were created just like me.
Yeah.
In the image of God, the creator of all that is. You are his representative and he doesn't hate you. He doesn't want to scold you. He doesn't want to punish you. He wants to reveal the darkness in you so that you can become the light in the darkness of this world.
So I love everything you're saying. And what I hear is that this love is at the root of everything that you're doing now.
Absolutely.
So as we wrap up today, how do you help people today? What is it that you do and how do you work with people so that those that are listening that are saying, wow, I need this kind of love and acceptance, but I don't even know how to begin to start that journey.
Right.
How would they work with you?
All they have to do is go to my website, rickcheatham.com, and on that, they'll see information on how to get in touch with me. So they can email me. They can drop me a DM. They can even give me a phone call. But what I do is I set up anywhere between a 30-minute and one-hour intake call with them so I can get a kind of a feel for where they are, what they're struggling with, what they want to accomplish. Get a sense of what their identity is today. And then we develop our own personal one-on-one coaching with them once a week. And I do it for 3 months. So we do a 90-day once a week call where I coach them through whatever it is that they're struggling with. So it becomes very personal, very one-on-one. At the end of that 90-day offering, we have other things that we can bring people into, whether that's more of a group setting or if they want to continue with a one-on-one setting, we do that as well.
Okay. I love it. Well, we'll make sure that all those links are in the show notes.
Perfect.
And that everybody has access to you. I've also added it to your name screen so they can see it too. But thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for staying the course and just being that light in the world, the light and the love. Your message just resonates so much, you know, with people that are listening to this, because the people who find our show are people who are looking for answers. And I think it's a great reminder that God's already provided the answers and that the main thing is that we have a choice.
That's exactly right. And in that choice, it only comes in the present moment. Mm. That choice will not happen if you're constantly focused on the past, and it won't happen if you're constantly focused on the outcome in the future. It can only happen in the present sweet spot of the moment. And that's
such a great reminder.
That's where my work with these men really take place, is trying to find that sweet spot for them and the choices that they make on that daily basis. So that's a, I appreciate you highlighting that, putting that out.
Yeah, absolutely. I see it and hear it every day in so many different areas.
I bet you do. Yeah.
And we often feel such a victim of life and feel that so much is out of our control, and it is. And yet the biggest things are totally in our control, which is our choices, our thoughts, our beliefs, our feelings, and then what we do with those and what we make them mean.
Yeah, that thought was pretty interesting. As a man thinks, so is he, is what the scripture says. So what are you thinking about? What are you ruminating on most often, and how much do you think about that? And I can tell you, if that's what you're thinking, that's what you're going to be. Guaranteed.
Yep. Absolutely. That one, and the scripture that says the power of life and death is in the tongue.
Yes.
So our words have so much power. And if you're telling yourself that this is bad and this is awful and I hate this person and I'm angry. My husband and I joke all the time. I was in a working with a coaching company, and it had become very toxic environment. And I had created this habit of saying that just ticks me off. That ticks me off. That ticks me off. And I was mad all the time. I can't imagine why I was mad all the time, because I was telling myself I'm ticked off all the time and didn't even realize how much I was saying those words until he pointed it out.
Yeah.
And he did it in the best way that he knows how, which is he uses humor for everything. And I'm like, you know what? And he's like, wait, that ticked you off. And I was like, why would you say that? No, that's not what I was going to say. And he goes, because you say it all the time. I was like, no, I don't. Literally, Rick, it wasn't even 5 minutes. And I was like, that.
The light bulb just went, boom.
Yes. I was like, that ticked.
Oh, yeah. That's.
And I was like, okay. there's truth to what he said in the humor. There's always truth. And I had to just that little switch brought my awareness to my own words.
That's exactly right.
And then
Take that aim. We take aim on life. Yes. We become aware of what our words are saying. We make choices in the intentional moment that we have, and boom, our mind starts to shift. It really is that simple.
And what you said about the subconscious, in that moment, I was like, am I really angry? No, okay, I'm not angry. I'm frustrated. Why am I frustrated? And then I got to go deeper. And then I just began to catch my words, and then catch the underlying thought and the feeling and the emotion, and began to just reframe it. And it was like, oh, I'm not mad at all. I'm just really feeling very frustrated because I'm at a place where I have to make a decision, and I'm frustrated that I have to make the decision.
Yeah.
And I'm also in the opportunity where I get to make the decision. So now it's on me.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And like, there was so much freedom in that, and
that
just the whole
beautiful
energy shifted, and I got to control the narrative. So,
so beautiful.
A beautiful gift.
It really is. You got to uncover a gold nugget of life. And it just, those moments are so, I call them the fingerprint moments of God, where you can come back and go, bang, God said, oh, bang. Who was there? Oh, bang.
Yeah.
That was, and you just start looking at that when you go through life and you go, wow, God's been here this whole time. And here I've been thinking that this is happening to me because he's not here. No, actually, he's putting you through a weight training session.
Yeah.
He's making you a rock mover. And you get the choice to become the rock mover, or you can be crushed by the rock. It's your choice. And I don't care what the rock is. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah. Such a gift. I love it. Well, thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for everything that you're doing. We'll make sure that they get all of the notes. And if rock movers, if this has pricked your heart, if there's something here that's been said today, I want to just encourage you to follow through on that, to reach out to Rick, to follow him on social, learn more about him, his journey. If you are facing these rocks, if you're facing these challenges, these addictions, these hurdles, and you feel like life is happening to you, the gift in this is that you get to open all of this up with support and see that it's happening for you to help you become the gift that you were meant to be in this
Amen.
World.
Amen. Beautifully said, Karen. Very, very well said.
Thank you. We are all going to face rocks. The gift is that we don't have to face them alone.
That's right.
And
bring your tribe and let's move them together.
That's right. That's right. So I love it, Rick. Thank you so much. Extend our love and appreciation to Kelly for helping you move these rocks and everything that you guys have done together. I know that it takes two to make a great marriage. And so I know that the woman behind you in this movement has got to be a powerful woman of God. So
you guys are going to hear about her. I'm in the middle of writing a book called My Answered Prayer, and it's dedicated to my wife who went through the journey with me and didn't abandon me. She showed unconditional love, and she loved the unlovable, and she forgave the unforgivable. And when she did that to me, it completely changed my life. I just was unaware that I was going to face the same unforgivable forgiveness. Ooh. I guess it kind of like connected the dot to me, and I just went, whoa, okay,
wow,
what a journey, ma'am. So because my wife gave me the grace and the unconditional love and allowed me to learn from the journey, I was then put in a position where I was asked to do the same.
And
there was the struggle, because I didn't want to forgive that unforgivable dude.
And I think all of us face those moments where we feel like whatever has happened is unforgivable, as little or as large as it is.
Yeah.
And the truth is that it's holding that person captive to the unforgiveness is really what's punishing and holding us down, right? It's really about us. It's not about them at all, because God's already forgiven them.
It's not the outside that's causing all the stuff we're dealing with. It's all an inside job.
Yeah. Not to paraphrase Taylor Swift or do anything cheesy, but she has this lyric in her song, and I jokingly use it quite a bit, because it's like, hi, I'm the problem, it's me. It really is me. Like, it always starts with us. It always starts
with
us.
Maybe I should start listening to Taylor a little more often. I hadn't heard that song.
Yeah, she has a song, The Anti-Hero, and it's really like, hi, I'm the problem, it's me. And that is the gift. You get to see that you're the problem, but you're also the solution, because God's already paved the way, and you know, it's all right there. Here's your roadmap. We're all just figuring it out. So love it. Well, thank you, Rick.
Thanks for having me.
Extended our podcast, but man, it was good stuff today. So Rock Movers, I know that you're hearing this and just finishing this on a high like I am, and make sure that you connect with Rick and follow him, and we will be watching you for that book. So thank you for sharing. Thank you, Karen.
Thanks for having me.
All right. You guys have a blessed day. We will see you on the next episode of The Rock Movers. Wow. Wasn't today's guest amazing? I hope that you enjoyed them as much as I did, and I hope that you got something super valuable. And I also want to know, what are you getting from this? What would you like to see? What are future episodes? Who do we need to be talking to? Who has some amazing rocks that they want to share? And that's by sharing, commenting, and subscribing to The Rock Movers, and then following me over on social media. We want to stay connected. We want to be a part of your world. And I want to invite you to be a part of mine. If you'd like to book a call, go a little bit deeper into some of these topics, you can find a link to book that call on CoachKarenGray.com. You're always invited to join me there, and I can't wait to dive into deeper conversations with you. That's my way of giving back and saying thank you for being a part of our rock moving community. Until the next episode, or until we jump on the call, have a great day and keep moving those rocks.